Hi, I'm Roger Doherty, and today we're going to talk about an introduction to SQL Azure Database, kind of take you through the basics of what SQL Azure Database is all about, and help you understand how to start building applications. So SQL Azure Database is SQL Server technology delivered as a service on the Windows Azure platform. We're hoping that both simple web developers who need basic relational database functionality for their web app will use SQL Azure, as well as developers building more complex applications that require things like Elastic Scale in the cloud. SQL Azure is enterprise ready. It has built-in support for high availability, so you don't have to worry about data loss or hardware failures or storage failures. We automatically maintain replicas of your data, and we will promote those replicas if something happens to your primary. And it's also designed to scale out elastically on demand. So unlike on-premise SQL Server, where often the focus is scaling up on big iron, SQL Azure is all about using lots and lots of cheap throwaway databases to get your work done. So it requires a slightly different approach in terms of architecting your database solution. SQL Azure is really designed to get you going very, very quickly. You just choose a plan, choose a billing option, and provision your servers. And at that point, you can get started developing. So let's go ahead and get started and jump in and talk about what that development process is like. So when you provision SQL Azure Database, you provision a server. And that server is really not a specific piece of hardware. It's more like a service head that gives you the ability to connect to an endpoint. The endpoint is a fully qualified domain name that we provide for you or generate for you using the format shown here. And initially, when you provision a server, it only contains a master database. And we'll talk a little bit later about what you would actually use that master database for. Once you get ready to provision your server, you can do it interactively using the Windows Azure Management Portal, as shown here. You just click on the Create button. Specify the name and the password for an administrator login, and you can also during the provisioning process create some firewall rules to set up connectivity to access to your SQL Azure database from outside the Microsoft Data Center or to services from inside the Microsoft Data Center. You can also automate server provisioning if you like, and this is a real popular option for developers who are building SaaS applications. You can do that through a REST API by simply calling some REST methods with some certificates that are registered for authentication. Or you can use the Windows Azure Platform PowerShell CMDLets. These are downloadable from the domain that's listed there on the slide. And you can essentially write a quick PowerShell script to provision up a SQL Azure server using the new SQL Azure Server method, and also to create new firewalls. And you can also delete firewall rules and change your admin password using those same CMDLets. So it's very convenient. So SQL Azure is designed to support development from your popular languages of choice. So the core database uses Transact SQL, just like SQL Server does, fully compatible. You can develop your application tier using your language of choice. So obviously that would include the .NET framework and ADO.NET, which would be typically the way you would access SQL Azure from, say, an ASP.NET solution running in a Windows Azure web role. You can also build native solutions using C or C++ using the ODBC driver that ships with the SQL Server native access client. And we also provide both Java and PHP drivers that are fully functional and highly capable for professional developers building Java or PHP apps. Additionally, we support various frameworks and object relational mapping technologies. So if you want to expose your data over HTTP as a REST-based service, we support the OData protocol. In the future, you'll be able to just enable that in a default way for a particular SQL Azure database, and we'll provision a service for you to do that. Or you can build your own using the Entity Framework and WCF Data Services. If you're an Hibernate developer, and Hibernate fully supports SQL Azure as well. And we also support a lot of popular tools. If you're familiar with things like SQL Server Management Studio or our command line tools for SQL Server like BCP and SQL CMD, those tools are fully supported. And there's a lot of popular database modeling tools that are adding support for SQL Azure as well, like Embarcadero and CA Irwin Data Model. So there are some differences in when you compare SQL Azure to SQL Server, and those are listed here from a high level. When you're dealing with SQL Azure, you're really kind of abstracted from a lot of the physical administration that you may be used to having to take care of for an on-premise instance of SQL Server. So the focus is really on logical administration of your server rather than dealing with a lot of hardware, software, updates, and that type of thing. When you create a SQL Azure database, your database and your log files are placed for you automatically. So you're not really dealing directly with storage. You're sort of abstracted from storage. We'll automatically provision 3 high availability replicas for you and keep those in sync. That is a default thing that happens every time you create a SQL Azure database. Additionally, every table in SQL Azure must have a clustered index on it if you're going to use that table for any kind of update activity. And that is so that we can keep that table in sync across the replicas. That clustered index is required for the synchronization fabric that we use. Your maximum data size in SQL Azure, or database size, sorry, is currently 50 gigs. We intend to expand that in the future, but that's currently what you're limited to. Keep in mind that, again, with SQL Azure, as you grow, you're more likely to be provisioning additional databases as opposed to trying to grow one database to a very large size. Slightly different architectural approach for building your solution or your application. So there's some things that are not supported in the SQL Azure environment if you're used to doing things a certain way in SQL Server. Commands like backup and restore are not supported. We maintain those high availability replicas there for high availability and for disaster recovery. We really feel like there's not a need to take backups of those databases and ship them back to on-premise. In the future, we do intend to make available point-in-time restore capabilities so that you can roll back to a version of your database, if you will, at a particular instant in time, say maybe to recover from some accidental data loss that happened as part of running a batch operation or something like that. SQL Azure databases are fully contained. And they can't reference objects outside of them. So things that let you switch around between databases, like the use command, things like linked servers and distributed transactions and distributed views, we don't allow you to create those types of things in SQL Azure. And the reason for that is that that database needs to fail over as a unit, and it needs to fail over successfully. And we can't have a situation where you've got dependencies to objects outside of the database that would compromise the availability from a failover perspective. So those types of features are disabled in SQL Azure. Some other things that aren't available in SQL Azure, we're still working on whether or not we need to make those things available and how they would be exposed. Those would include things like Service Broker and CLR and SQL Agent. So those are some considerations. If you've got existing database applications that use those features, you may need to engineer some things in the application tier to do some of those things. So when you get ready to start building your database, we really support two different approaches. We have a thin client approach that uses the new SQL Azure Management Portal that we just rolled out this quarter. And that includes web designers for things like tables and views and stored procedures. And it's actually quite a nice user interface. You can go in, you can insert data, you can delete data, you can run queries and visualize multiple result sets. It's a very, very nice design and supports most simple data definition language and data manipulation language operations. For a basic web developer that just needs to create some tables, maybe enter a couple of rows really quickly, this should get you pretty far, and you might not have to install any tools at all to build your database out. For more sophisticated development, we also have a rich client. This is called SQL Server Data Tools. SQL Server Data Tools is a Visual Studio-based integrated development environment for building database solutions that target either SQL Server or SQL Azure. And really, the idea behind this tool is to give you a much more modern development experience when you're building your database applications. So we give you this sort of declarative environment where you build your database using a model, and then you kind of develop declaratively over top of that model, and we can do very powerful things like check for breaks and object dependencies or refactor across the model in ways that maybe only C# developers or C++ developers were previously used to. We can offer those types of things for database development now as well. We give you the opportunity to develop and test both in connected and disconnected states. So I don't have to have a database to develop a database. If I have an existing deployed database, I can sort of develop over top of that in a connected way if I like. We support both of those types of scenarios. And we support platform targeting as well. Sometimes as a developer, it can be difficult to determine whether a particular feature is available, say, in SQL Server versus SQL Azure. So with platform targeting, you basically set the target, and then if you're doing something that isn't supported on that target platform, we'll give you either an error or a warning to alert you to that. The SQL Server data tools are going to be available for free using the Web Platform Installer. You'll also be able to get them with SQL Server 2012 or with Visual Studio 11 when it ships. So once you've built your database, it becomes time to deploy it. And we're introducing a new set of frameworks and services called the Data Tier Application Framework that really dramatically simplifies this process. In the past, that really involved, you know, kind of developing Transact SQL scripts and kind of executing those scripts. And versioning databases involved, you know, hand coding upgrade scripts to move you from one version of your database schema to another. We're providing a much more modern and much more predictable and productive way of doing that with the Data Tier Application Framework. The DAC provides you with a single unit of deployment for both schema and data. So if it's schema only, that's called a DAC pack. If it's schema plus data, that's called a backpack. And once you build that, you can hand it off for deployment. After a DAC has been deployed, you can upgrade it to a new version of the DAC, and we'll figure out how to migrate the database from one version of the DAC to another version of the DAC. You don't have to hand code those upgrade scripts anymore. We support the same type of platform targeting that we talked about in SQL Server Data Tools. The same types of capabilities are available in the DAC. And you can build a DAC from scratch if you like, or you can extract it from an existing database to get a jump start on your database project. So the Data Tier Application Framework is available in a variety of ways. It comes with SQL Server Data Tools. It comes with SQL Server Management Studio. It's also implemented as a service on the Windows Azure platform. That's called the SQL Azure Import-Export Service. And we have a bunch of samples that you can get access to and some nice command line utilities for automating DAC operations on sqldacexamples.codeplex.com. So I would suggest that you check out that site if you're interested in learning more about the Data Tier Application Framework. once you build your DAC, it becomes time to deploy it. That's a very straightforward process, and there's a couple different ways of doing it depending upon which portal you're using. The new SQL Azure Management portal gives you the ability to deploy a DAC right from the ribbon bar. So you basically click on that deploy button, and you point it to the DAC that you want to deploy, and it will be registered with your SQL Azure server, and a database will be hydrated, and all your tables and views and stored procedures will be created as part of that. That's one way of doing it, and that works with version 1 and version 2 DAC packs. After you deploy your DAC pack, you would then load up your data using traditional approaches like running scripts, running bulk copy operations, or using SQL Server integration services. You can also deploy DACs in SQL Server Management Studio. So I can hand a DAC off from my development environment to a DBA who's using Management Studio to actually manage my SQL Azure databases. So you can also deploy backpacks currently using the Windows Azure Management portal. So remember, backpacks are both schema and data. And you can see the SQL Azure Import-Export service exposed in the ribbon bar for the Windows Azure Management portal. It shows up there as the Import and Export CTP. And in this case, you can import and export backpacks from Windows Azure Blob Storage. And that's a really nice way of kind of keeping different versions of your database out there in the cloud and kind of, you know, deploying them and loading up the data on the fly as required without having to copy them from your on-premise environment. So a couple different approaches there. You can, in terms of upgrading, once you've deployed your DAC, upgrading it is currently only supported in Management Studio. We don't have upgrade support yet in the management portals. So you'll have to use Management Studio for that, or write your own, or use one of those command line utilities that we talked about on the CodePlex site. So once you've developed your database, it's time to secure it. And the first thing to understand about SQL Azure from a security perspective is that it supports its own authentication mechanism, its own logins and passwords. And this is equivalent to, in the SQL Server world, what we call SQL authentication. Integration authentication is not yet supported, so you're SQL auth only. So the process of kind of securing it involves connecting up to the master database to administer your logins and also to create and drop databases. So that's essentially the only thing that you would use that master database for. Your admin login gets provisioned as part of the service provisioning process, and that's essentially equivalent to what we would call SA in the SQL Server world. It's important to remember that that login has full rights on the server and all databases contained in that server. So it should really only be used for administrative purposes, not for access from your applications. You manage your logins with create, alter, drop login commands. And you can grant privileges to manage logins and to create and drop databases by adding a user to either the login manager or the DB manager role. So now that we've actually created a database, we now have to administer security at the database level. So SQL Azure has kind of like this two-tier security. You first connect to the service, which is, you know, all those login credentials that are defined in the master database. But then to actually do anything in a database, that login has to be associated with a user account in the database itself. The administrator login is automatically associated with a special user known as DBO, or the database owner. So you don't have to do anything special to enable access to the admin login. It just shows up as DBO in the database. Remember that the DBO has full rights for everything in the database, so it should really only be used for administration. Your applications should not connect with DBO privileges. You can then create, alter, and drop users using transact SQL commands, and those user accounts are associated with logins that were previously provisioned. And then to grant privileges to those user accounts, you would add those users to system or user-defined roles. using the SPAD role member stored procedure. That's the most efficient way to grant privileges. Rather than going and granting privileges to individual user accounts, it's much more efficient to grant them to a role and then add users to those roles. Another nice best practice that I would like to suggest is to organize your database objects into what we would call schema containers. That's a logical separation of your database objects that allows you to secure them as a unit. So you can then grant privileges at the schema level instead of the individual object level. And that's a very efficient way of designing and architecting the security for your database. Finally, once you've set up your security, it's time to connect up your application. So SQL Azure supports the Tabular Data Stream protocol. It's the wire level protocol that SQL Server uses. It supports that over top of TCP/IP. In order to connect up to SQL Azure, you have to encrypt your connection, so SSL is required. And also, if you're trying to connect up from outside a Microsoft data center, you need to make sure that you have firewall rules to support that connectivity. So here's an example of a connection string in a web.config file for an ASP.NET application to connect up to SQL Azure. There you've got your data source name value pair using the fully qualified domain name for your SQL Azure server. You're using SQL Server authentication. So in this example, we're embedding the user ID and the password right in the connection string. To make that a little bit more secure and make sure that you're not using login IDs and passwords in your code, you could actually encrypt these connection strings, store them in Windows Azure Blob Storage, and retrieve those connection strings and decrypt them at runtime to avoid having them in code. Notice there the encrypt property is set to true. That turns on SSL so you can connect up. There's a lot of different special considerations when dealing with connecting your application up to SQL Azure that you need to consider when doing your development. A few things around legacy providers are worth mentioning. The most recent, ODBC and ADO.NET and PHP and Java drivers all understand how to connect up to SQL Azure, but we have some load balancer and gateway technology in between that you need to go through sort of a routing process to actually get your connection. And some of the legacy providers aren't aware of that. So to address that, if you're using a legacy provider, you may need to provide your login in sort of a special format of the actual login, followed by an at symbol, followed by the server name. Not the fully qualified server name, just the first server name component. And that'll get you through the gateways and get you connected up to your SQL Azure server correctly. As I said, that's really only required for legacy providers and legacy clients. So some other considerations. SQL Azure is a multi-tenant kind of scenario. So unlike hardware that you own or manage yourself, we need to make sure that things aren't running amok and consuming too many resources up in the cloud. So idle connections are terminated after 30 minutes. Long-running transactions are terminated after 24 hours. We do have automatic support for detecting and thwarting denial of service attacks. We have some technology we call DOS Guard for that. And if your connection is a suspect connection from a denial of service attack perspective, it will be terminated and no error message will be sent as a result of that. There are some ways to determine if that happened, but in general, you're not going to get any kind of specific error message if you were terminated due to being a DOS attack. Failover events. That's when some problem is detected in our fabric, and we need to promote one of the secondary replicas to the primary. That all happens automatically. There's nothing you need to do at the application layer to reconnect, but any existing connections are going to get terminated, and any active transactions that they had going at the time will get rolled back. There is some throttling that occurs if we detect an unusually high CPU or utilization or storage utilization. We may throttle throttle that SQL Azure database, and there are some specific error messages that you can check for that. There's some nice guidance on what those error messages are in a wiki published by the SQL Server Customer Advisory Team. So in general, how do you deal with all these things? Well, if you're building ASP.NET, ASP.NET uses connection pooling. You know, it understands, you know, what to do if a connection is no longer open. It just opens up a new one in the pool and routes your traffic through that. So a properly constructed ASP.NET application is using application pooling, does a lot of what you need to do already. For other types of apps, you may need to implement, some retry logic in your app to handle these different types of transient failures that we've talked about. You also need to understand that because we're maintaining these replicas, it takes a little bit longer for transactions to commit because those transactions have to commit on all the replicas. So you might see a little bit of latency for insert, update, and delete operations, and that would be the reason why. Finally, again, these SQL Azure databases are fully contained. They can't reference objects outside of themselves. So you need to, we're not going to support, things that implement cross-database dependencies. So in that case, you'll need to connect up to each individual database from your application tier, and if necessary, combine those results in the application tier to present them in a unified way. So at this point, I'd like to switch over and show you a quick demo of building applications on SQL Azure. So what you're seeing here is a very simple web application that I've developed using SQL Server data tools and deployed already on-premise. And it does basic CRUD operations against my SQL Server database that's running on-premise. So here you can see I'll go in and I'll add a new bike, for example, and we can go grab an image for that bike. And, there's a create operation. I can edit it. I can delete it. Very simple, straightforward web application. So what would it take for us to move this web application and its associated database up to the Windows Azure platform? Using SQL Server data tools. So I'm going to drop out of the web application. Here we find ourselves in Visual Studio 2010. We have SQL Server data tools installed and integrated with our existing Visual Studio installation. Remember, you can also install SQL Server data tools in a standalone way, and we'll just load a Visual Studio 2010 shell for you to do that. So here's our database project, and in there you can see the various tables and views and stored procedures and things that we've developed for our database. And there is a separate code fragment for each object, essentially. We'll drill into this a little bit more in a minute. And you can also see as part of SQL Server data tools that we have a new SQL Server node in Server Explorer. And the idea here is to give you everything you need to work with a SQL Server instance or a SQL Azure instance right in the tool instead of making you go install some other tool like Management Studio. So let's go take a look and see what our app looks like already deployed on an on-premise instance of SQL Server. You can see that my data tier application component has been registered on my SQL Server instance. So I've taken the blessed version of my schema in that DAC pack, I've registered that DAC with the SQL Server instance, and then I've gone and used DAC to also deploy the underlying database associated with that DAC. And that database is now being used in production. We can browse it here using SQL Server data tools. I can go and take a look at the data in there and have a nice interactive experience with the actual deployed database if I like. So let's see what it would take to actually move this database up to SQL Azure. What I'm going to do is I'm going to actually automate the process of migrating this database up to SQL Azure using the data tier application framework. So I'm basically calling the DAC framework, and I'm extracting the DAC for my database that I've deployed on-premise. And I've also extracted all of the table data and included that alongside with my schema into a backpack. I then take that single file that includes both my schema and data, and I call the data tier application framework again to deploy that up on SQL Azure. And that's what's happening right now. We're using the data tier application framework in sort of an automated fashion to deploy that backpack up to SQL Azure. So you can see here that we're deploying the backpack, and we're creating our tables, and we're loading some table data that was included in my backpack. So in one step, we're creating both our schema and our data up in SQL Azure. And finally, the last thing that this script does is it actually exports that backpack that I just deployed to Windows Azure Blob Storage so that I have a nice copy of it that I can use to deploy other databases in the future. So in basically a few lines of code, script code, I've migrated my entire SQL Server database up to SQL Azure. So no sooner have I so there's some things that I've already deployed in advance, probably worth mentioning here. Before the demo, I went up and I deployed the web tier of my application in a Windows Azure web role. So that was running and deployed in advance. The other thing I deployed in advance were some reports that the application uses using SQL Azure reporting. So no sooner have I deployed my app than maybe I want to make some changes to it. So let's switch back into SQL Server Developer Tools and see what we need to do to actually version our database schema. So I'm going to pop open the definition for my products table, and here you see the new SQL Server Data Tools table designer. It has a split screen view that I can use to graphically create and edit my table structure, or I can work in code view, and I can swap those, and SQL Server Data Tools automatically synchronizes them for me. So I can work in whichever mode is most comfortable to me. Let's do something really naive here. Let's go delete a column from my products table. And let's say that's the change that we need to implement. We're going to deprecate a column. So I'm going to delete the finished goods flag column. And immediately what's going to happen is SQL Server Data Tools is going to give me an error. Remember that SQL Server Data Tools allows me to develop declaratively over a model of my database. So all of my dependencies are tracked. So as soon as I deleted that column, SQL Server Data Tools was able to alert me to the fact that there was a view that referenced that deleted column. So I double-click on the error, and the view pops up with the offensive column definition. And to fix this up, just for the demo purposes, I'm just going to delete the column from the view, save that back, and hopefully our error is gone, which it is. So at this point, I'd like to get this thing deployed back up to SQL Azure. So I'm going to do a couple things. First thing I'm going to do is I'm actually going to target SQL Azure. So if I'm doing something in my database project that isn't compatible with SQL Azure, I should get some errors or warnings indicating that that's the case. Demos being what they are, right now my project is in good shape, so I shouldn't have any problems deploying this to SQL Azure. The other thing I'll do is I will annotate the metadata here for my DAC, indicating that this is a new version of my DAC that has a deprecated column. And with that, I'm going to actually build a new version of my DAC. I'm just going to right-click on my database project and select Build. And the output of that will be a DAC pack. So we can just pop that open in Windows Explorer, and here is a representation of my new database schema all bundled up in a DAC pack instead of a bunch of manually coded Transact SQL scripts. So let's say that a database administrator is actually managing my database for me. I could deploy this thing myself if I want as a developer right from within SQL Server Data Tools if I have privileges to do so, or I can hand this DAC pack off to an administrator who can use a tool like SQL Server Management Studio to do that. So let's swap over to SQL Server Management Studio. Let me just grab this path here. We're going to need that. And when we go up and we look at what's deployed here in SQL Azure, we can see that the DAC has been previously deployed. It's version 1.0 of the DAC. okay? And what we want to do now is we want to upgrade that to the new version of our DAC. Now, in the past, that would involve hand-coding a bunch of upgrade scripts. But with the Data Tier Application Framework, I just right-click on my DAC, I say Upgrade, I point it to the new version of the DAC that we just built in SQL Server Data Tools. So we'll go find that. Should be sitting down here. There it is, ProductsDB. Notice my new metadata shows up. This is version .1 of my DAC. And some comments there that it's the version of the DAC that has my deprecated column in it. The next thing that the Data Tier Application Framework does for me is go analyze if there's any kind of drift that has occurred. So drift would be some change that was made to the schema of the database after the DAC was deployed. We would want to warn you of that and allow you to reverse engineer that drift back into your project so you didn't step on it during upgrade. In a perfect world, there is no drift because you've locked that down. And in this case, there was no drift detected, so we're in good shape. The next choice I have is whether or not I want to roll back this operation. If you select rollback, it does a side-by-side upgrade, creates a new database, creates the new schema, copies the data over, and then swaps the names. If you've got a really large database, you probably want to upgrade it in place. Let's assume that's what we want to do here, so I won't choose the rollback option. I'll want to just upgrade that database right in place. So the next thing the DAC framework does is create an upgrade plan of how we're going to move from version 1.0 to version 1.1 of that DAC. And this is all the stuff that I would have had to have done manually myself by hand-coding Transact SQL scripts. That can be a lot of complicated operations for something as simple as deleting a column. And here you see all the different things that we would have had to have done ourselves to actually delete that column. Okay, we're getting a warning here that if we run this upgrade, a column will get deleted, and that will result in data loss. So it's going to make us confirm that that's indeed what we want to do. We get a nice summary here in the data application, data tier application wizard about what's going to happen. We're going to move from 1.0 to 1.1, and now we actually implement the upgrade. So all the heavy lifting gets done for me by the Data Tier Application Framework, and I can go, take the time that I saved and use it more productively for other things. Hopefully what you've seen here is some of the power that's offered by the new SQL Server developer tools to make it easier to build database applications that target your on-premise environment and the cloud, and how the Data Tier Application Framework and DACs and backpacks make that process a lot more productive and a lot more straightforward. So we've gone ahead, we've upgraded here. If I refresh this list, we see that my DAC was indeed upgraded to version 1.1. If we go in and we look actually at the database and we open up our product table and look at the columns in here in SQL Azure, we'll see that that finished goods flag column is gone from both my table and my view as well. So finished goods flag is no longer in there, so we're all good. Now we should be at a point where our web application is fully functional and works fine. So let's go back and open up the ASP.NET application that we have deployed in the Windows Azure web role to talk to our newly deployed and updated SQL Azure database. So at this point, that same web application that I was running on-premise is now functioning up in the cloud. And I can do the same CRUD operations against it. I can insert the same goofy images. And we have a fully functional ASP.NET solution now running in the cloud. We don't require any hardware. We don't have to license any database software. All the maintenance and high availability is taken care of for me. I'm purely in the mode of developing solutions at this point. So hopefully the demo has helped you understand some of the interesting capabilities that are available to you for building database solutions that target the Windows Azure platform. And hopefully you've learned enough to get you started building your own SQL Azure database solution. Thanks a lot.